Welcome to Modern Sign Books on Blog Talk Radio. If you're interested in what makes your favorite authors and collectors tick, then you'll love hearing what they have to say in our live interviews. Learn how they got started writing, the books and authors that inspired them, what they have in their personal collections, and much more. Meet today's hottest authors as they discuss their life and writing in revealing conversations with our book specialist, Roger Nichols. And find us at modernsignbooks.blogspot.com. Now sit back and enjoy a few minutes with Modern Sign Books. Here's Roger.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Roger Nichols. Very pleased to welcome as our guest today, Thomas Perry. Thomas is one of the few PhDs in English to actually do very well in the world of writing. He has one from the University of Rochester. And he has not just been in the halls of academia. He's worked as a park maintenance man, a factory laborer, a commercial fisherman, university administrator and teacher, and a writer and producer of primetime network shows, including Simon & Simon. We'll be talking to him about that after a bit. He's written a few novels, too. I think it's up to 23 now, including the Jane Whitfield series, the Butcher Boy series. And he has a huge shelf of awards, including the Edgar and the Gumshoe and too many others to name. He's also been known to collaborate with Clive Cussler as well. His latest is 40 Thieves and has a marvelous setup in which a married pair of former cops are pitted against a married pair of assassins. We hope will be the start of a new series. So, welcome.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. This is...
I really like the introduction. That's very nice. Thank you.
Well, I could have gone on longer, but you know, we want to be able to you know, talk to you on a person-to-person level. One of the things that just absolutely intrigued the heck out of me is this setup with this couple against a couple. Does that stem from any particular interests or association or background?
Not really. But what I was thinking as you were doing the introduction was that, you know, I'm probably going to be responsible for essentially encouraging a lot of people to get married. I began with the idea of doing the couple who used to be cops and are now detectives. And as that sort of mystery grew in my mind, I began to think about who would be the most appropriate people to kind of be the rivals. And somehow the other couple kind of came into my mind, and I began to sort of build who they were. And what I do in these situations is I begin to think about a character, and then when I thought about a character enough so that I can hear him talk, then I'm ready to go. And I began to sort of figure out exactly how they were going to interact. And in this particular case, what's going on, or part of what's going on, is that each of them finds himself looking for a killer or possibly someone who has hired the killers and doesn't know who they are. In other words, they're rivals. That is, each couple is looking for the same person, essentially. And what they don't know is who that person is.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, it's a rivalry rather than a battle.
True, though they do engage at some points.
Yeah, exactly. They do. And, you know, but it's one of those things where the conflict comes partly from trying to find, or let's say the major conflict comes from trying to find the same person. For different purposes.
Mm-hmm. It's rich in characterization, and part of it is that you are able to evoke sympathy for the bad couple as well. I find myself semi-rooting for them, and that's some word magic there.
Well, thanks. Yes. I think probably that's part of taking your character seriously and really, in a way, I have to sympathize with them to some extent. I mean, there's a kind of cliche that people say, which is actually true, the story for the villain is his story. It's he's the hero of his own story, he's not thinking of himself as simply a nemesis of someone who's more important.
There's a reason why on your website you have a couple of killer quotes from Stephen King and Robert Parker. When your other fellow authors are fans, that says something to those of us who read.
Well, it's good to have authors who are better than you are who like your work. And, you know, I found actually that both of those, two, the late Robert Parker and Stephen King, are extremely, or were, you know, let's say, in the case of Parker, were really generous about other people's work. And Stephen King continues to be, you know. I sort of miss, he used to write a column for Entertainment Magazine, which I don't know how he ever got time to do that. But, you know, I noticed in there that he was often, you know, he would often sort of just mention somebody's work as being good or worth your while or whatever. And, you know, he used to defend books that sort of came under fire and stuff. And I've always admired him for that. He really has been an incredible sort of force in American writing for that reason, I think. And I was, you know, I was glad to see that one of my editors got a blurb from him one time, and that's the thing that's on my website. It's one of the things that I feel proudest of, actually, is that I entertained him a little.
Yeah, that's got to be a great feeling. But then, and one of the things about being an author is that the reaction time is such a delay from the time you sit there, you're typing away, and you go, oh, that's a really good one. I'm really happy about that. It can be a year or 2 years before you get feedback on that particular passage.
Well, feedback is another issue, really. I mean, it is, when you go out, for instance, when a book is published, you go out and visit bookstores and libraries and other places where people gather to talk about books. And often you're one to two books past that in your real life. In other words, you wrote it, you know, two books ago, and it's sort of hard sometimes to even bring it back because you concentrate very hard on what you're doing at that moment, you know.
Yeah. So it's... There are a lot of nifty little observations throughout, and I'm going to quote some of them because when I do read, I do take notes on it. And one of the ones I loved is that, do you have any idea what gray hair is worth in our business? Middle-aged women are invisible. Men can't even see us. That's an insight. And you're sure you didn't have a psych major as well there?
No, to be honest with you, that one is a quotation from my wife. My wife, Jill, is a writer too, and I met her working in universities, we were working, both of us were working at the University of California at Santa Barbara when we met, and she eventually, long story short, we also worked at USC, and when I was writing television, she was my writing partner. And she, you know, has also now published recently her first novel and has a second one coming on the way. And she is this a woman who noticed that. I mean, it's she, in a sense, I'm just quoting her. I think part of being a professional writer is summed up by a Mark Twain quotation, which was, a writer should be a prodigious noticer. And you know, should also have a memory for interesting things that other people say. So that one came out.
Yeah. Well, let's give her credit and let's plug her book. What's the book she has and the ones coming out?
Oh, well, she has a book called Dead is Better, which is actually a quotation from a Stephen King novel, Pet Sematary. Mm-hmm. It's quite an interesting and funny and clever mystery. It's also sort of a philosophical meditation on many things, including the perspective of your own life, of looking at your own life from being a position of being dead. which is kind of an interesting thing. That's out from Fahrenheit Press right now, and the next one will be, I don't know, fairly shortly, a month or two. And that's called Dead is Best.
Uh-huh.
So she's working away these days. It was kind of a surprise because all of these years she had no interest in actually writing novels. She, you know, primarily when she was writing for fun, it would be poetry for, you know, maybe 30 years or so. And then she just decided some time ago that she would start writing this book. And I never saw it until it was finished. I had no idea what she was writing. We write in the same room every day. But I, you know, we don't read each other's stuff until the person asks and says, you know, I'm ready to have you see this.
Well, see, you have your first reader right there in the same room.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah.
I do. I mean, that's an incredibly valuable thing to have your first reader be somebody that you can actually talk to every day, because, you know, that's the most difficult thing in the world, to tell somebody that you like or love the truth about what they're writing. And I think really in our case, we were trained to do that by the fact that we worked in television together. Yeah. You know, what that amounts to is that one person is sitting at the computer and typing dialogue or something, and the other person paces behind them and says, looks over his shoulder and says, he would never say that, you know, that kind of thing. And you know, so you kind of get trained and sort of realize that you're not doing anybody any good unless you tell the truth to the very best that you possibly can.
Yeah, that's one. Now it gives me an opening to dive into a little bit to your television background, because I was overjoyed to see that you co-produced and wrote some of the episodes for Simon and Simon, which is one time was one of my favorite programs back there with Rick and AJ and Lieutenant Downtown Brown.
Yep. Well, that was an interesting experience. It was our first one, our first television experience. We were both working at USC when one day I got a call from a man who introduced himself as the vice president in charge of current programming and marketing at Universal. And he said, you know, I just finished reading your latest book, which in those days was Metzger's Dog. And he said, I think you could write for television. Would you like to try it? Would you like to come and work for us? And I said, gee, you know, I'm in the middle of a meeting right now in my office with a couple of people, and I really can't talk about it right now, but I, you know, I think I'm not the one. I've never even seen a television script. I have no idea how to do it. And he said, well, think about it, and I'll call you tomorrow. And so what I did was I walked down the hall to my wife's office and told her what had happened and asked her what she thought. That was the beginning of it all, actually, and it was fun. I started writing something, and it was a script for Simon and Simon, and you know, my wife ended up helping me with it, and from then on we became writing partners, and we kept doing it for about 11 years, which was fun. We did it until our first child was about to be born. It was a couple days before, and then after she was with us, we didn't do any more full-time television. We just wrote freelance stuff.
I just have this wonderful thought about how, after slaving all week long and the shooting, and maybe a month or so later, you turn on the TV and watch your script come to life, and how interesting that must have been.
Well, it was, and it was a huge learning experience. I mean, in a sense, you know, we came in after that show was already successful and had been, you know, going for, maybe 3 or 4 years. And so the people there were competent, they were experienced. They knew what they needed and so on, and they were pretty confident. And they took the time to help us to learn how to do it. And, you know, that was a big part of it. But people were generous enough to have time to help. And at the same time, what you learn in television is you're sitting around in a room with, I don't know, four, maybe five other writers and going over each other's scripts and or possibly even just listening to them pitch what the episode is that they want to write. And there's an awful lot of criticism that comes, you know, freely and thick and fast sometimes. And, you know, because people are essentially protecting their jobs. You know, these are hard to come by. And particularly in the environment of those days, it was a three-channel universe.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there weren't that many opportunities. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, we were really learning to take criticism and use it and turn it to your advantage is something that everyone can benefit from. It's just an incredible help. I mean, I can remember in instances, you know, you would pitch a script and then people would make suggestions and they would want to change things and so on. And then also, of course, the production people would sometimes change things or, you know, essentially tell you to change things. You know, I can remember writing between us a night motorcycle chase in which, you know, things were pretty rough and something I would easily have done in a novel and not really thought about it. And then having a conversation with the supervising producer, the line producer, who says, well, you know, we can't afford to do this. They've got to have this conversation on a couch.
It's a whole different flavor to it, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does. So, you know, you do learn to adapt and to reality and also to, you know, sort of jump in when something's not working. And you know, I think that's a terrific experience for anybody. You know, often, you meet people who really are very smart and very clever about their ways of getting around problems. And, you know, I really did enjoy that experience of going into, you know, there was a screening room and you would look at dailies every day, you know, see what had been shot the day before and see how it's working. You know, I also found that after you've heard all this criticism and stuff, you know, somebody would come up to you after dailies or, you know, during the screening of the full episode or something, and they'd say, you know, gee, that's really nice script. You know, that's really, you did great. And, you know, there was never an impulse to say to anybody, yes, sure, but you should have seen it before all these idiots suggested stuff. You just say, thank you. And what you're taking credit for is also their work often, you know, or their suggestions or something. So.
Do you think that flexibility, that quick give and take, has helped you in your writing of novels?
I do. I think, you know, anything that you know helps you in your writing of a novel. I mean, to some extent, it shapes your perceptions and also gives you a sense of what a story ought to be. One of the things about television is that if you write a scene which is too long, you know it immediately when you see it on the screen. You say to yourself, oh my God, you know, the third page of the scene is, you know, is a terrible mistake and it just lays there. It's not a good thing. And, you know, you get a sense of pace. You get a sense of a point of view. That's another thing is that, you know, you have a fixed camera. You know, it shows a scene. What can, you know, whose eye is that? Who is the character who's watching this? And what can he see from here? And how is he going to interpret it? And I think, you know, an awareness of that is really a good thing to have as you describe things in a novel. In a sense, it's like carrying a camera around, you know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, I would think that writing the beats for television would also give you pacing for a novel, though it's a different form. you have kind of a feel for how long you need to go before you say, let's have something happen here, instead of more just dialogue or exposition.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I mean, it does teach you to find, you know, more interesting ways of conveying information, and it does. You know, I've often, you know, said to people that I was blessed with a short attention span, and to some extent, what that does is it helps. So you edit the length and sort of duration of any particular scene. And, you know, if I'm bored with it, I have no hope that anybody is not going to be bored with it. You know, at a certain point, you just get a sense that it's time to move on, or this person's speech is too long, or whatever. You know?
Speaking of that, the character voices in 40 Thieves are instantly, you can tell instantly who's talking and what they're talking about by their language and the phrasing and whatnot. Developing that sense between one character and another, do you have any formal way of doing it, or does this just come organically to you?
Well, I think you sort of, you learn to write to the things that interest you. Mm-hmm. And that's always kind of interested me, the way, the different ways in which people talk, sort of that's their signature, that's the cadence of their speech or their accents or their something or other, just kind of helps you get into the sense of what they're like. I remember reading an article that I think was written actually by Michael Palin, mm-hmm. the Monty Python guy. He had been at the studios in London and got into a car with Peter Sellers, the late Peter Sellers, was a great comedian. And Sellers was really good at inventing characters. And as they were in there, there was a taxi driver who was taking them somewhere, and he was one of those talker taxi drivers who, you know, sort of goes on and on about different things as you're driving. And then when in this particular case, when they got out of the cab, Peter Sellers started being that cab driver. And what he was doing was not only, he, you know, sort of starts out by imitating his physical mannerisms and his speech, you know, his accent and so on, and kind of his opinions, and then he begins to talk about things that they hadn't talked about. In other words, he had that character. He could be the character, you know, this person, not just by mimicking him, but by saying the things that Sellers knew that he would say if the topic changed. Which, when you think about it, is a pretty strange ability to have. But in a way, that's what novelists do, too.
Yeah.
You know, you begin to kind of play at being that character.
Yeah. Do you find yourself becoming the characters as you write them?
Yeah, I think you do. I mean, as you, I mean, just, you know, as an intellectual exercise, you do. You don't go around your house and start talking strangely, but, you know, you do hear that voice. You do get a sense of what that character is, and, you know, suddenly you, if you're presented with a whole new question, you could answer it in that character's way. Or think about it as that character would think about it.
That's very intriguing to think about how you're an actor in one sense, and just as Peter Sellers, you're taking on a role and interpreting it instead of with gestures and voice with on the keyboard. And
I also think that writing, that telling stories, is a sort of fundamental a human activity as finding food or building shelter.
Yeah.
I mean, people were doing that immediately as soon as language begins to develop. And really, what we're doing is what children do when they play. You know, they pretend to be somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
In my case, I guess I've been playing cops and robbers for 40 years. I don't know.
And we thank you for that, because you provided some pretty awesome entertainment for the rest of us along the way. I want to point out a couple of things that just popped out of me as we're reading. At one point, you talk about Nicole Hoyt having all these, I probably mispronounced it, Ladro porcelain statues, and you describe them so wonderfully, I suspect there might be one in your house.
No, but wow, you're really close. A friend of ours, close friends for many years, had lost her mother. You know, her mother died, and she was in a position of having to sort of be the sibling who goes in there and into the parents' house and figures out what to do with everything. You know, all the stuff that they had collected, and you know, prepare the house for. I guess they ended up renting it out. But part of it was this large collection of Ladro porcelains, which, you know, was just sort of, was not something that she particularly wanted or anything like that. But, you know, as we were going through with her, I saw all of these things and I thought, oh my God. That's in earthquake country, that's not really a great thing to have.
And it loses some of its artistic integrity if you put this giant strap over it and bolt it down, I suspect.
Oh, right. You know, this in particular was sort of special because it was in a glass case, right?
Oh, my.
In a sense, you have a protective device that magnifies the danger.
Kind of defeats the whole purpose in a sense, yeah. There's a portion of the book in which you floored me in when you talk about this discussion on pages 247 and 248, why the assassins would be wise to kill the people that hire them rather than carry out the contract. And I never thought of that before. It's really interesting piece of logic there.
Well, I was pretty proud of that. I thought that was a Nicole thing. Nicole says that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seemed to me to be a kind of window on who she is. You know, she's, in a sense, the marriage to Ed kind of frees her up to be, I don't know, as crazy as she wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, it frees up her imagination, too. And that, you know, if I were in the hitman business, I would certainly consider that as a way of making my money.
Right.
Choosing the, you know, the person who actually wants somebody killed, because that's the for the various reasons that she mentions, of course.
Right.
You know, that person obviously has some money if he's willing to pay a hitman.
Mm-hmm.
And he also doesn't suspect that you're going to do it.
Right.
And, you know,
I don't know.
All kinds of good reasons makes them easier than the other person.
Right. And they probably won't be missed either by if they're that kind of a person. But
that's right.
Yeah. So there's a lot in here, but it's also a fast read. I mean, you know, some books are very, very long reads, even if they're short. But this one, it zips by. And then I found myself going back and saying, really? Let me go back and check that again. So there's, and when you read it the second time, there is another layer that emerges too. So I love the fact that you put all this stuff in there. And I just have this picture of you sitting there at the keyboard, chortling to yourself from time to time.
Well, you know, there are these moments when you are sort of proud of something that you've done. Usually that's a danger signal, you know. whatever it is that you like the best that you've put into the first draft often ends up being something that you probably ought to cut because it's too, you know, being proud of yourself is coming through. you want to be an invisible presence.
Yes.
Rather than, you know, everybody's read books that we sort of liked, but that were overwritten.
Called attention to their skills and their technique rather than the being transparent. Yeah. But that's, you know, I was trying to say that that's not the case here. There's the stuff is there. It's a quick read, and also it benefits people to go back and check again. And so I really like that. Is there a topic that we've not touched on that you'd like to go into?
You know, I really don't. I haven't thought of anything that I particularly, you know, was dying to reveal.
Oh.
I do. You know, I'm just saying I really did enjoy the experience of writing that book, and it's. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, a great deal. Let's mention your website, because it's really a nice website.
Oh, well, thanks. It's thomasperryauthor.com, and Thomas Perry Author is one word. This is the problem of having a fairly common name. You have to kind of stretch to get your
JohnSmith.com won't cut it. No, absolutely. Also, we should mention that you have signed books available at vjbooks.com.
Yes,
and they're very nice people there. We know them well.
They certainly are. I've been, years and years actually of dealing with them. And, it used to be a brick and mortar store years ago. And, it's great people.
They are great people, indeed. And so are you. And so are your characters that you create. And so are the books that you write. And I want to thank you for a very generous amount of time you gave us today for this interview. You have been a real delight to talk to.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's really a pleasure to meet you over the phone.
All right. Thank you so much. Our guest today has been Thomas Perry, and his latest book is 40 Thieves. Highly recommended. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Modern Sign Books on Blog Talk Radio with book specialist Roger Nichols. Be sure to check us out at modernsignbooks.blogspot.com.